I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke. How are you this week, Emma? What have you been up to?
I'm really good. I've been working hard and playing hard now that all my classes have opened back up. So that's really good fun. Back at pool, going back to hoop and all that kind of thing. So yeah, everything is well. Also, we just to do a really quick shout out. Someone left us a really lovely review. I quite enjoy their name on iTunes. It's Hackalackalack. Which is really fun to see. And they like the chemistry between us, which is sweet. Also, an old friend of mine called Steph got in contact to say that she's like, I've been kind of lurking, listening, and I meant to reach out over and over again, but I'm really enjoying it. So that's good because I've not seen her in literally years. So it's good to reconnect with people. And hopefully the next time she's close by, I'm going to meet up with her now. So there you go.
Nice. Exciting. That's lovely.
I know. What about you? Have you got any recommendations for us or any chat?
I do. So I think you'll remember recently I mentioned that I was listening to a podcast called Fool Me Twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I am really enjoying. I finished the first series, which I told you was similar to Chasing Charlie, mm-hmm. about a woman who's basically in like a romance scam, which was really good. I'm now on the second series and it's basically about a diamond scam.
Ooh, that's exciting.
And I'm also really enjoying it. So series one was great, recommend it, and currently would also recommend series two. Other than that, not much. I haven't been really watching any true crime stuff. I've actually been watching Gogglebox while I've been doing my workouts at the gym, and I've obviously got Sean into Downton Abbey as well. So we are severely off the true crime trail at the moment.
You can't be on it constantly, Joanna. You can't.
No.
Be.
Nope. It's always good to have a bit of respite, I think.
Yeah. Keeps you interested in it. Yeah, you can get bogged down in it, I think, sometimes.
100%. So yeah. So that's my chat this week. So I'm interested to hear what case you've got for us.
Yeah, so I know that everyone seems to like the historical cases. Mm-hmm. So this one is a historical case. It's Victorian. And it is the case of Jess McPherson, a.k.a. the Sandyford murder case. So it's a little bit confusing because there are two Jessies / Jesses in it. So what I've tried to do is keep one as Jess and one as Jessie. We'll see how that goes. We'll see how confused I get. So it's actually one of the four notorious murders which took place in an infamous area of Glasgow known as the Square Mile of Murder. We've already covered the cases of Madeline Smith and Dr. Edward William Pritchard. And I have the fourth one on my list to cover. So I'm going to keep it quiet for now. But this is one of the four notorious cases from there. So it's all kind of the west end of the city centre of Glasgow. So this one is, it took place in Sandyford Place, which is just, so it's the west end of Sauchie Hall Street, but it was known as Sauchie Hall Road at the time. So on July the 4th of 1862, three sisters were walking along Sauchie Hall Road, which is now Sauchie Hall Street, and they heard women screaming. They decided not to investigate any further and just carried on with their walk. What they didn't know is that they likely heard the dying screams of Jess McPherson. Jess McPherson, who I don't have a specific age for due to the age of the case, she seems to be in her 20s. But also back in the day, I don't know whether it's because they didn't keep their birth certificates, the kind of the ages of everyone in this, people aren't entirely sure of, which I find really interesting. Whereas obviously today, everyone knows everyone's age to the minute. But yeah, so she's in her 20s and she was also known as Jess McPherson Richardson. She was a servant at 17 Sandyford Place to the Fleming family. She had worked on and off with the Fleming family for many years. She had left to work in Manchester for, I think it was 18 months, and she had also taken a bit of time off to set up a shop with a friend of hers, but that doesn't seem to have worked out because she ended up back with the Fleming family. She was a live-in servant and highly trusted. She was kind of ran it, it sounds like. So at the weekends, what would happen was there were three generations of the Fleming family, and the son and his children, so the younger family with the kids, would go away to Dunoon, where they had a holiday home, and then it would be Jess and the older Fleming man, who was called James Fleming. They would stay in the house. So three generations, it was a professional family. Mr. Fleming, James Fleming, was also known as Old Fleming. And he was 87 years old, and he had actually come from Aberdeenshire, and he mostly spoke Doric, which is the kind of Scottish language that is used up and around Aberdeenshire, for anyone that's not aware of that. He'd made a lot of money setting up a manufacturing business. He was a weaver originally, but then he went into business himself, made a good amount of money, and obtained a portfolio of properties that they got rent on as well. He put his children through education, and his son then became an accountant, and he helped with obtaining the rent and running the various businesses. So Old Fleming was known, he had a pretty bad reputation. He was a rough and ready character, so he still spoke Doric and a lot of people couldn't understand him a lot of the time. He drank heavily, but he had a reputation for being really handsy with the servants, the female servants. He'd actually gotten someone pregnant before, one of the previous servants that had worked there. And it seems like his church had their own sort of legal system, because he had been charged by his church with fornication because the maid bore him an illegitimate child.
Right.
Yeah. So not really someone you want to be working for. Jess McPherson had actually told friends before that Old Fleming had made advances towards her. He'd asked her to marry him, and he'd actually tried to get into her bed on various occasions. So she's in her 20s and he's 87 at this point.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. Disgusting. Yeah. Excuse me while I just dry heave for a minute.
I think I was just sick in my mouth.
Horrific. So from all accounts, Jess was a really attractive young woman. She had had various advances made by different people, and there's reports of a policeman coming onto her in the street and her pinning him to the ground, which I think is amazing. Apparently she was quite a strong, capable woman. Like I said, she ran the Sandyford residence when the younger, so it was John Fleming was the younger, so him and his young family would go to Dunoon, and she was left in the house with Old Fleming, which sounds like a lot of fun. So Jess had a friend who is Jessie McLachlan, so we're going to call her Jessie, and the unfortunate victim is Jess.
Jess
and Jessie. So Jessie McLachlan was a 28-year-old from Aberdeen. She was married and she had a son. She was married to a seaman named James, who was away from home a lot.
I like how you emphasised the man.
Yeah, it just makes life a bit easier, you know. I'm not opening myself up to anything. He was a man that was at sea. He didn't earn very much either, and he was away from home a lot. So Jessie was, they were kind of just above the poverty line a lot of the time. Right. She borrowed money from friends and she took in lodgers, and she was known to pawn items at the pawnbrokers. The two of them were friends, and on the 4th of July, the two women spent time together at Sandyford Place, as Jess had said that she was upset about something Old Fleming had done. So Jessie went over to Sandyford Place. I think she took rum and some biscuits, which sounds like a wonderful night in. Yeah. And from her version of events, Old Fleming essentially invited himself along. And
to the pub?
No, it was in the house. In the house that she was a servant at.
Right.
So he just decided to join them for drinks.
Ugh.
Which, I know, one of those. So they had some drinks and quite a lot of alcohol was consumed by the sound of it. So later on, Jessie's version of events is that Old Fleming's whiskey had run out, and he sent her out to buy more to a whiskey shop, which unfortunately didn't have any. When she came back, she had to knock on the doors. He'd locked it. She kept knocking. And then when she was let in, she heard groaning. She ran to Jess's room and found her injured on the floor.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so she's like crouched over on the floor, head in her hands. Her eyebrow's been cut and I think her nose is bleeding as well. But she was kind of out of it and not really able to speak to her properly. And she's bleeding profusely from her head. As you know, head wounds do tend to do that. So she was quite worried about her. She washed her face and her shoulders and everything down and she asked Old Fleming to help her get in the bed, which she was kind of unwilling to do. She'd said that before she left, Jess had made a comment. So Old Fleming had said, go and get more whiskey. And Jess said something like, oh, if I have more whiskey, who knows what I'll say. Or I'm totally paraphrasing. I think it was something like, my tongue is loose with whiskey and, you know, something like that. And he wasn't happy about it. So essentially they had an argument while Jesse was out going to get the whiskey. And that had ended up in her being injured. She washed her face and her shoulders. Then she went to another part of the house to go and get more supplies. When she came back, she found Jess dead or near dead. And old James Fleming had a meat cleaver in his hand.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so she was covered in injuries, head to toe. When she came back, old Fleming told her, you can't leave. And essentially said, if you leave, you're as guilty as I am. You go to jail. And he bribed her. Okay. So he gave her money and gave her items from Jess and silverware and said, we'll make it look like a robbery. That's what's going to happen here. And threatened her personally. I don't think he actually said the same will happen to you, but I think it was implied. Mm-hmm. But essentially he said, if you tell a soul, you're just as guilty as I am and you'll go down with me type thing. Mm-hmm. He was later found to have burned his own clothes after this as well, and all of the flooring was cleaned in the house. So that was the Friday, kind of the late Thursday night, Friday morning. When John Fleming, so old Fleming's son, returned to the house on the Monday, the 7th of July, Jesse was nowhere to be seen, obviously. And old Fleming said he didn't know where she was and he hadn't seen her since the previous Friday. Now, this is a long-standing servant who was really well, you know, highly trusted. He insisted that he had, now this is a Doric term, cut. It's not just Doric, but he said she'd cut, which kind of means she'd just taken off without cut any and run. Knowledge. Yeah, like a cut and run, exactly. Mm-hmm. But that was quite surprising to the family because she was really like almost like part of the family at that point. So they went to try her door, which was locked, and they went and got a key and opened it, and that's when they found her. So she was half naked when they found her, and her hair was down, which was unusual. It was a total bloodbath, blood everywhere, stab wounds and defensive wounds all over her body, cuts that had actually lodged in her skull. And her nose was hanging off. So it was extreme, totally brutal. Yeah. The police were called and they discovered blood not only in Jess's room but other various parts of the house. They found that the silverware was missing and other items were missing. There were three small naked footprints in blood on the floor in the bedroom. All of Jess's best clothes had disappeared and her everyday dress was gone from its hook. In the hall between the bedroom and the kitchen there were smears of blood and it looked like they'd tried to clean it. So the floors, the kitchen and the bedroom and the stone flags of the lobby had been washed. There was blood on the kitchen sink and chest of drawers in old Fleming's wardrobe room across the passage. And there were two shirts with blood spots on them. They also found that the face, neck and chest of Jess had been washed, which we knew. Suspicion immediately fell on old Fleming as he was the only person staying in the house with Jess at the time. However, a pawnbroker read the story in the paper, contacted the police to say that he had bought the silverware, which was reported missing, from a young woman named Mary MacDonald, which was a well-known alias of Jesse McLachlan.
Oh no.
Yeah, not the brightest move on her part. So on the 13th of July, Jesse McLachlan and her husband were arrested, but it was found that her husband James was at sea when the murder occurred and he was set free.
That because he was a seaman.
That's because he was a seaman, yeah. You're never going to let this go, are you?
No.
I'm going to use it forever. Anyway, they find bloody clothing in her home. And the statement that she gave was just full of holes, basically. It seems like generally in her life she lied about things. And it didn't play to her favour doing that with the police. She also denied that she'd taken the clothing and the silverware. So police asked McLachlan, well, they had her in custody. This is amazing. This is the first time that this has been known to have happened in Scottish history. They placed her foot in cow's blood and then made her step on a plank of wood. And then they matched that to a photo from the crime scene of the floor in the bedroom.
Interesting. Early forensics, I like it.
The very first use of forensic photography in a trial in Scotland.
Wow.
1862.
And that, I was going to say, was that 1860s?
Yep.
I like it. I think that was also around the time that the capital punishment was abolished.
Well, there you go. Well, God, don't. This is a running joke. This is a running joke because I got confused in a quiz question and I thought that's when capital punishment was abolished, but it wasn't because I don't know dates. So
sorry.
I'll never live it down. Anyway. So she, like I said, she maintained her innocence and she retold the account of Old Fleming murdering Jess because she had found out that he had been released. So he had been arrested as well, but then they released him as soon as they decided it was her that had done it. And so they basically used him as the key witness against her.
No.
Yeah. It didn't help that she had denied, you know, so many of the things that they could
prove. Yeah, she's not done herself any favours.
She's not done herself any favours. So his account had flaws as well. But see, because he was 87, they kind of just wrote that down to him being old and infirm and that sort of thing. One of the examples...
And he wasn't. He was cunning and conniving.
Well, wait till you hear this.
Okay.
So he denied. So on the Saturday, the 5th of July... The milk boy had come at like 8:30 in the morning. Normally it'd be Jess that opened the door, but Old Fleming opened the door instead, which was highly unusual. So he took the milk in, that was it. He denied that he ever saw the milk boy, but there was actually the milk boy's boss driving the truck and he saw him as well. So okay. They both testified saying that no, Old Fleming took the milk in that day. So... what happened was they said, why did you answer the door instead of Jess? And he said, well, she was dead by then. And then when they said, oh, that's interesting. Did you know that? And he said, oh, not at that point. But he never, ever answered the door normally. Never.
Yeah.
And his son found it strange that when he came home from Dunoon that his dad answered the door because it was always Jess's job. Yeah, exactly. So it was all very odd, but yeah, it seems like he was quite cunning in that regard. So the Scottish public were completely enamoured with this case. It was all over the news. It was the most interesting thing happening in Scotland at the time, the gruesome facts of the scene and the murder and the fact that there was like a higher status family caught up in the case. Mm-hmm.
Can imagine it was a delicious scandal.
Yeah, and at the time there were no laws surrounding libel or what you could say about people. So Some of the newspapers were taking sides against each other and they were just reporting pretty much what they wanted. They were reporting heavily biased information. They were taking sides and just speculating wildly. And so they were releasing daily and sometimes hourly. And one of the newspaper owners at the time said that they wished they had a case like this every other month so that he could retire because it was just making them so much money. So the public obviously had their own views as well. So the case was 4 days long, and on the fourth day, Jessie was found guilty by the jury, and the judge sentenced her to hang.
Right.
According to several reports, when Judge Dace arrived on the final day, he carried a black cap in his hand, and it's believed that that was seen to be a signal to the jury that a guilty verdict was expected. The judge denounced her accusations against Old Fleming as, quote, a tissue of wicked falsehoods, end quote. So that's a phrase I'm going to use in my life going forward. A tissue of wicked falsehoods. I really enjoy that. Yeah, I know. So, like I said, the public were really, really caught up in this case, and there was a public outcry. People were not happy that she got the death sentence. They don't believe she did it, or they thought that maybe they did it together.
She wasn't solely responsible.
No, but there was signs up saying, you know, hang old Fleming and all this kind of stuff. Apparently he was stoned by the public when he went to Dunoon, all this kind of stuff. So it was a big, big deal. And there was a closed court commission done that reviewed the evidence of the case, and that commuted her sentence to life imprisonment instead. She didn't serve life. She served 15 years in Perth General Prison before being released in 1877. She then emigrated with her son to the USA and remarried, although I don't know what happened to the first husband, the seaman. I don't know what happened to him.
Maybe she got lost out at sea.
Perhaps. She died in Michigan in 1899 on New Year's Day. It's widely believed by historians, as it was by the public at the time, that Jessie McLachlan likely disturbed old Fleming during the murder of Jess McPherson and that she was innocent all along.
I agree.
So that was the case of Jess McPherson, aka the Sandyford murder case. Like I said, it was the first time that forensic photography was used in a Scottish murder trial, which is pretty amazing, really, that they thought to do that at the time. And I just, I don't know, I've got this vision of this Victorian prison cell and them going and give, like, with a bucket of cow's blood and a bit of wood. I just think it's, I don't know, there's just something really, just takes you back. It gives you, like, a really, I don't know, a really strong sense of how it would have been. It's so tactile, and it's quite a, for them, it was the most advanced way of doing things. But obviously now that just seems like such a crude method. You know, it's bizarre.
And also I think that they maybe would have actually thought it to, you know, to be quite experimental as well. Whereas now, like you say, it's just part and parcel of an investigation, you know, getting the footprints and stuff.
Thing is though, obviously, if her version of events is correct, which I think it is, she would have stepped in the blood. So that's why her blood, you know, her footprints would have been in the blood on the floor of the bedroom. So it makes complete sense. But I mean, yeah, they didn't even try and clean up the crime scene correctly. It was pretty clear that one or other or both of them was going to go down for it. And it's just unfortunate the way that it worked out, because I can't imagine he would have lived the 15 years that she served. So, you know, he'd lived his whole life. Yeah. He had his kids and his grandkids and this beautiful house and stuff. And then the servant goes down for it and has to go to jail. Miss her son growing up. She still shouldn't have lied. Yeah. She still shouldn't have tried to, like, pawn the silverware. But I think she's her own worst enemy from what I have read and seen. But there's some good bits and pieces online. You can actually read all the court documents. And one of the links that are posted, I think it's advocacy website. So it's got all the notes from the trial. It's got her testimony. It's got the judge's decision. And yeah, there's, I think, hundreds of pages if you want to read them, if anyone's interested.
Interesting. Yeah, fantastic. I did really enjoy that. It kind of put me in mind of the film, I don't know if you've seen it, From Hell?
No, I've not.
It's, I mean, it's an old film, but I actually really, really like it. It's about Jack the Ripper and it's Johnny Depp.
I remember it, but I haven't seen it, but I remember, like, it being out and stuff like that.
Even now, like, I still really like it, and it shows a sort of Victorian, like, approaches to, and just their mindset, and yeah, I don't know, I find it quite an interesting film, and it kind of put me in mind of that when you were talking about this case, because I thought, you know, similar kind of era, you know, and what they would have said and what they would have thought, and, you know.
I find it funny about the fact that they could say whatever they wanted in the news, and I was thinking to myself, gosh, yeah, you couldn't do that now. And I thought, what am I talking about? They still do that now. They just then get taken to court for it. They do the exact same thing. They sell the newspaper and then they get sued for it, and then they pay out because they've already sold however many, you know, million copies. So yeah, there's still a lot of that going on. But yeah, very sensationalised, quite an interesting trial to have been around when it was on. I think it would have been pretty interesting. But yeah. Anyway, do you have a fun story or fact for us today?
I do. So the story that I've got today is a little bit longer probably than my usual little snippet. But it's basically about, so this is quite recently. So this is just a couple of months ago, but I just thought it was quite funny, but also sad, to be honest, at the same time. So it says, young North Koreans ordered to stop speaking, dressing and dancing like South Koreans or else.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no. So apparently it was saying Seoul's creeping influence on the secluded state's way of life is even more dangerous than enemies who are taking guns, according to an official newspaper. So it's saying that young North Koreans have been warned that they must follow traditional lifestyles and adhere to the country's dialect. The secluded state's official newspaper made the demand in a column as Pyongyang tries to eradicate cultural influences from South Korea. Kim Jong-un's regime is particularly focused on the speaking habits of millennials, with some mimicking their neighbours by referring to their husbands as oppa, a term that means older brother. The Rodong Sinmun newspaper said North Korea's standard language is superior and young people must use it correctly, all while ensuring their clothes, hairstyle, music preferences and dancing styles are acceptable. Yeah, I know. So according to South Korea's Yonhap news agency, its article warned that the ideological and cultural penetrated under the colourful signboard of the bourgeoisie is even more dangerous than the enemies who are taking guns. Late last year, harsh new measures were introduced that mean parents can be fined if their children are caught enjoying South Korean entertainment or copying the way they speak. Those caught with media from South Korea can face up to 15 years in a prison camp, and punishments are also administered for using unregistered televisions, radios, computers, and mobile phones from other countries. A life sentence can be imposed if someone is convicted of importing banned material from South Korea too, while those smuggling large amounts of content made in the US or Japan can face the death penalty.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, Tae Young-ho, the first North Korean defector to become a South Korean politician, told Reuters in January, "In the daytime, the population is shouting, 'Long live Kim Jong-un,' but at night they all watch South Korean dramas and movies." Last month, reports suggested that Mr. Kim had compared K-pop to a vicious cancer that could make North Korea crumble like a damp wall.
Jesus.
That's a Sky News article, by the way, which I will link in the show notes.
So some of the K-pop fans I have interacted with in the past, yeah, they've been a bit odd. So I kind of get it. I'm joking. I totally don't get it. That is horrific. That is really awful.
Isn't it bad?
Can't imagine living somewhere that was so restrictive and you're not even allowed to enjoy a certain type of music.
Like being told the way that you have to speak, dance, behave. You know, I know that there's like, you know, social norms and stuff anyway, but
it's not a norm if it's enforced.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I just can't imagine living under that kind of rule.
Yeah, it's not good. I feel awful for them. And the thing is, the government is not even questioning why they're idolising South Korea and its, you know, its culture. Mm. So it shows a massive lack of understanding there. But then they're not allowed to go there really either.
No.
But, you know, on the outside, remember, everything's great, everything's fine, don't look here. It's just a communist country, apparently. Definitely not.
Nothing to see.
Yeah, nothing to see here. Definitely no dictators, none of that. Yeah, absolutely wild.
So there you go. So that's my absurd...
I'd get on fine. I'm not remotely interested in K-pop. So.
You'd be
quite happy with me.
I've never listened to K-pop, so I just don't really know. But, I mean, I like the appeal of it all being really colourful and cheery.
Yeah, I do, actually. I like the aesthetic more than I think I like. The thing I don't get is why they have to have, like, 15 band members.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get that either. It's like an explosion of S Club 7, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, S Club 7 went to Wonka Land and ate a blueberry and then stuff went wrong.
Do you remember that as well, though, like, when S Club 7 came out and everybody was like, there's seven of them. I mean, seven.
This is too many.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember when there's too many of them. I mean, my memory is not great at the best times. But in the K-pop kind of community anyway, people are obsessed with each of the members. They'll, like, cosplay them. They have massive fan groups. But it's very obsessive. It's a bit scary. Mm. And I read an article on BuzzFeed or something, and it was about this guy in America that had got so much surgery to try and look like one of the singers or, you know, participants in BTS. And he looked like an alien. It was really weird. For one thing, he was trying to look like someone of a completely different race, which I don't think is conducive to natural looking results.
Yeah, and Michael Jackson.
Yeah, it was weird. It was really, really strange. It's just this poor, poor guy. Like, imagine being that obsessed with a pop singer to the point that you're putting yourself under the knife and mutilating yourself. Yeah, really, really bizarre. But yeah, there's always going to be extreme people out there, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, wild.
Apologies to any of our fans who might be interested in going out and getting surgery to look like a member of a K-pop band. We are not judging you, but we are.
We just hope you have the most natural results by a licensed doctor. Please do research.
Thank you so much for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating or review on your favourite podcast platform of choice. If you want to speak to us, you can reach us on socials. We're on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. And if you have a case recommendation, a true crime related story or fact you want us to read out, then you can drop us an email, info@murdershespoke.net. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.